Hello and welcome to A Cornucopia of Tales and Tellers. I am here with my dear friend, the ogre from the mountains.
And I am here with the ghost witch from the plains.
In other words, hello from Simona and Alan.
And today we are obviously celebrating Halloween, or as the Celtic calendar calls it, Samhain, which is where the veil of this world and the veil of the next world are at their closest. It's also time for a really good harvest, and the 1st of November is the first day of the Irish and Celtic New Year. So happy New Year, and enjoy your Samhain quite safely. So, Simona, what do we have in store on today's podcast?
On today's podcast, we've got 5 spooky stories from around the world. So in order, you'll find a story from David, a story from Despina, a story from Alan, a story from Manuela, and a story from myself. And David, Despina, and Manuela are coming back to the podcast for this occasion, and we're really, really happy to have them back. And their stories are just spot on, great to listen to. So we hope you enjoy them.
So thank you very much, guys, and enjoy what enjoy. You're about to hear.
Enjoy!
There was once a miser who kept so much gold. He had not spent a single coin in all his life. Everything was hoarded. He had become estranged from his family. He was all alone in the world. There, in his simple hut, night after night, he opened his treasure chest and counted his gold coins one by one on the table. And that night, as he was counting, as he always did, he heard death coming, the rattle of death approaching. And he began to swallow his coins one by one. He gulped them down and gasped, "None shall have a single coin that is mine. I will take them all with me." Every coin was swallowed down, the metallic taste harsh in his throat. He swallowed them one by one until every single coin was in his heavy belly. And then death shook his rattle, and the miser's life was over. His family finally found the corpse. He was carried, that heavy body, to the chapel, and a vigil was held. The priest was present, and there at midnight, the door swung open, and in came the devil with gleaming eyes. The devil gestured to the priest, and the two lifted the heavy corpse until it was hanging upside down. And they shook, and a single gold coin fell from the dead miser's mouth onto the stone-flagged floor with a chink. And they shook more, and the coins began to fall, streaming onto the ground, coin after coin, until there was a pile of gold coins there, and the body was empty. And the devil took that corpse on his shoulder and strode to the door and turned, his eyes gleaming red. The bag is for me. You all can keep the gold.
A long, long time ago, so long ago, nobody knows whether it really happened or not, there was a boy called Jack. Jack lived with his mother and they were very poor. One day, his mother opened the cupboard to see what she could get, what she could make for dinner, and the cupboard was totally empty. Not even a piece of bread was inside it, not even scraps. So she told Jack that perhaps he should go down to the market and ask around the shop owners there whether they needed some help so he could earn a penny or two and bring them back to her. Jack was a good lad, so he did what his mother told him. He went down to the market in the center of the village and he asked around, but one shop owner would tell him that he was too little, too thin, too young. The other one would tell him that probably you'd eat more than you would help with. So one after the other, he got rejected. Nobody would take him for work. And he was so sad because he did not want to go back to his mother empty-handed. But the hours passed, and it was nearly the end of the day when he was sitting all alone at the end of the market. And then he decided that perhaps he should return to his house. But he didn't really want to, so he took the long way there, the one that passed through the woods. As Jack was walking among the trees, he heard a pss-pss from behind. He turned, but all he saw was a bushy red tail coming out from behind some rocks. And out of the rocks came Fox. Now, Fox told Jack, I have noticed you've been looking for work and you haven't found any. You know what? Up that hill, there is a house where Mr. Savage lives. Perhaps he will give you some sort of work to do so you could earn a penny or two. Oh, up the hill, said Jack. Yes, yes, I know the house. It's Mr. Savage's, yeah. Well, thank you. He turned around to thank the fox, but the fox was already gone. So Jack took the path that led up the hill and went all the way to Mr. Savage's house, where he knocked on the door.
Yeah, who is it?
Came an angry voice from the inside.
It's me, Jack, sir. Would you be so kind as to open the door for a moment?
So with a sound, half the door opened and out came the face of Mr. Savage.
What do you want?
He said. From behind Mr. Savage, out came the loveliest smell of vegetable soup. Jack had not had anything that day, and his stomach was grumbling. And he said, excuse me, Mr. Savage, I was told that perhaps you could give me some sort of work to do. I'd need to earn a penny or two if you think there's anything I could help you with.
Oh, a penny or two, right? Said Mr. Savage. You know, I do not part with my money easily. What could you do?
Well, anything, said Jack. And anything you think I could help you with, just ask.
Said Mr. Savage. Take this shovel and go up to the next hill where the graveyard is. This is my work. If you can dig a deep grave before the sun sets tonight, perhaps you could earn a penny or two. And maybe a bowl of soup, said Jack, his stomach echoing even louder. Soup. You want soup. You want some soup. Well, you go on now. You do the job I asked you to, and we'll see if there's any soup left by the time you come back. So Jack took the shovel and went across the hill at the other side where the cemetery lay. He went inside it, and he started digging. Very enthusiastically at first, because he was eager to finish quickly so he could have a bowl of that delicious vegetable soup he had smelled and maybe a penny or two to bring back to his mum. But as time passed, he grew more tired, and then his shoveling became slower. So he'd go like, and then out of nowhere, there came a tap on his back. This sent shivers down Jack's spine. He knew he was all alone. He had looked around at the graveyard. Nobody was there. With cold sweat running down his spine, he turned around to see a ghoul. "What are you doing in my graveyard?" asked the ghoul. Well, now, Jack, yeah, but he was quite courageous because right away he answered that, so-and-so, Mr. Savage, told me to dig a deep grave and then after that I could have a bowl of soup.
Soup? Said the ghoul. What kind of soup?
I think it was vegetable soup, said Jack.
Vegetable soup? It's been a while since I had any vegetable soup, said the ghoul.
I tell you what, said Jack. If you help me dig this grave quickly before the sun sets, perhaps I could get the bowl of soup here to share it with you. What do you think?
Okay, said the ghoul.
And both of them started digging as fast as they could. And before you knew it, there was a large, deep grave dug in the graveyard. So Jack got his shovel and returned to the house of Mr. Savage. He knocked on the door again and out came that face, that fierce-looking face.
What are you doing here already? You can't possibly have finished digging a deep grave.
But I have, sir, said Jack. And here I've brought these bones for you to see how deep I've dug it. And he presented a few pieces of bones in his hand to Mr. Savage. Could I have that bowl of soup now, sir, maybe? Of the pennies you promised?
Bowl of soup, right? Well, if you've dug one deep grave so quickly, surely you can dig another 5 for me before the sun sets. Then, and only then, will I give you the bowl of soup you so long for, and perhaps a penny or two.
Off you go now, said Mr. Savage, and with that, closed the door. He slammed it into Jack's face. Well, there was not much Jack could do, even though his stomach was by now grumbling really loud. He went back to the cemetery.
Where is my soup? The ghoul said.
Well, you see, this and this happened, so and so, and Mr. Savage said that if we dig 5 deep graves, before the sun sets, only then will he give us the soup he promised.
Did he now? Said the ghoul. Let's get down to business then, said the ghoul, and with that they started digging 5 new graves.
When they were done, and they were all, well, Jack was all sweaty because the ghoul couldn't possibly have any sweat on him. When they were done, Jack took the shovel and returned to Mr. Savage's door. He knocked on the door, and out came the face of Mr. Savage.
You? The sun is only now setting. You can't possibly have dug 5 graves. Oh, but I have, sir. I have, said Jack. Now, could I have some soup, please? Soup, it's soup. You won't bring me back my shovel. You want soup, right? Well, it took you so long that I have eaten it all. There is no soup left, said Mr. Savage. And then he screamed as loudly as he could, because Jack turned and saw that behind him there was the apparition. Mr. Savage turned totally white. On his heels, he turned his back and ran as quickly as he could out the back door of the house, leaving all the doors open. When he was gone, Jack and his friend, the ghoul, entered the house and went inside the kitchen to find out that the pot was still half full and there was enough vegetable soup left for both of them. So they had their fill. And Jack looked around to see if there were any pennies left anywhere. But, of course, Mr. Savage had once again lied and there was none. Well, with that, he returned to his mother, because it was getting really dark now, and told her all about it. And the next day, both of them packed their luggages, everything they had, they didn't have much, and went all the way up to the hill and started living in Mr. Savage's empty, abandoned house. Mr. Savage was nowhere to be seen ever again. Whenever Jack's mum would make some vegetable soup, they would always leave another bowl outside for their friend, the ghoul. And not only that, they would also leave another bowl of vegetable soup at the beginning of the forest. You know for whom? Indeed, it was for Fox. For if it hadn't been Fox, Jack and his mother would still be poor and hungry. So if you're kind to the wild animals, you never know what sort of reward awaits you. They lived happily ever after. Jack, his mother, well, the ghoul didn't actually leave, but you know, and Fox. And as we Greeks say, we lived even better. Ευχαριστώ.
So my grandfather was in school until he was about 14, when he left school and got his first job, much like most people in Ireland. We're from a small little fishing village called Glenarm in County Antrim. Beautiful forest and a nice little port to take you out into the Irish Sea. Now, around the Antrim coastline, as beautiful and rugged as it may be, it's also extremely dangerous because of our cliffs and the currents running between the north of Ireland and Scotland, which at the shortest point is only 8 miles away. Now, what we can have, you can especially see this around Carrick or Reid, Port Ballantrae, and in fact the Giant's Causeway, is whirlpools, which can be very dangerous if you go fishing. Now, when my grandfather was 14, he got his first job leaving high school on a wee fishing boat in Glenarm. Now, obviously in Glenarm, small fishing village, but we did service the much bigger towns like Ballymena and Larne nearby. But you got a job in a wee fishing boat, and that's what he did. So his first job was a wee red boat that went out into the Irish Sea, fished for a couple of days, and then came back and sold all the fish. So the boat was so small, there was him, who had to do all the grunt work. There was the first officer, officially calling himself a first officer, and there was another guy who was officially calling himself the captain. That was it. Just the three of them out to sea. So when he went out for his very first day on his very first job after high school, the captain had put him in charge overnight of the, well, sailing the ship, basically. First officer was doing his own stuff in his office. The captain was sound asleep, as you would be if you can get a 14-year-old to do the hard work for you. So my grandfather was basically given a direction to point the boat in and keep it going that way. When during the night they would then lower the nets and hopefully catch whatever they were going to catch. So he was by himself on the bridge of the wee boat. The first officer was in an office somewhere and the captain was sound asleep. When all of a sudden there was a fella he didn't recognize, joined him in the bridge. And the guy said, "I need you to change the direction of this boat. I need you to point it north-northwest, and I need you to keep going there." My granddad, obviously, first day and the first job, thought nothing of this, and turned the boat to go north-northwest. The guy then disappeared after saying thank you, which was very polite, especially for a little armed person. A couple of minutes later, the first officer came up onto the bridge. I say came up onto the bridge. It sounds much fancier, but he just walked into the room that had the steering wheel. And he said to my grandfather, "What are you doing? Captain told you to point the boat in one direction. Did you just move it somewhere else?" My grandfather goes, "I did. Your other boy told me to head north-northwest instead of the bearing we were on, so I turned the boat around." First officer says, "Jerry, what are you talking about? It's just me and the captain. Was it the captain that told you to change?" My grandfather goes, "No, it wasn't." "Right, you're going to put this back in the original direction. There's no one else in this boat, so they couldn't have told you to point it anywhere else. Point it back. We're heading south down the Irish Sea, not north." So my grandfather says, "Fair enough." Turns the boat around. But 15 minutes pass. My grandfather sailing away by himself. Starry, starry night. And that other fella comes back onto the bridge again. But this time he's getting angrier, maybe. "I need you to turn this boat north-northwest now. This is not up for discussion. You do it now." Grandfather, obviously, being the 14-year-old in the boat, thought nothing of it. Turned the big wheel around. They were heading north-northwest and not down south. The guy goes, "Keep it in this direction. Don't make me come back." So he walks out. Grandfather thinks, fair enough. I'm not going to question him. Another 5 minutes pass. First officer appears again. "Jerry, you just turned this boat, didn't you?" Grandfather goes, "I did, sir." "Why?" "Your man was getting angrier. I'm not for doing that again." "You sure it wasn't the captain?" "Definitely sure it wasn't the captain, sir." "Right. Turn it south, and we'll not talk about this again. But there is nobody on this boat. You're imagining things." Grandfather argues back, saying, "Look, as sure as the day is long, he was here." First officer says, "No, he wasn't. He couldn't have been. So we're going south." So the boat gets pointed south again. Arthur thinks, fair enough. I am not going to argue with any of this. About half an hour passes. Nothing happens. Sailing away. Boat's bobbing up and down. Nice starry night. When the guy from before comes up for a third time. And this time he's really, really desperate. "I need you to turn this boat now or we're all done. You don't get it. Turn it around now or we're finished. You need to turn the boat north-northwest or we're all dead. Please turn the boat around now." Grandfather realizes how desperate this guy is in his eyes. He says, "Fair enough, I will. You look like you're in trouble." "We are in trouble. Turn the boat around." So he turns the boat around. He's not going to argue with anybody who looks this desperate. The guy disappears out the door again. First officer comes up. "Right, you've turned this boat, haven't you, Jerry?" My grandfather goes, "I have." "Right, I'm getting the captain." So 2 minutes later, the captain gets onto the deck and he's not amused whatsoever. And my grandfather explains the whole story to the captain and the first officer that there's this some other guy in the boat and he's telling them to turn the boat north-northwest, otherwise somebody's in trouble. Obviously, the first officer and the captain think he's talking nonsense and he's imagining things. First day in the job, after all, so who knows what you might think. And the captain says, "Right, if you think there's someone else here, we'll stay here the rest of the night. We'll stay here and see if he comes and we'll have a chat with this fella you're talking about." So they stayed, and they waited, and they waited, and they waited. Nobody showed up. The sun came up again. Nobody showed up. So the boat did eventually head south. They caught their fish, and they went back to port. Now, when they were pulling into Glenarm, Glenarm runs along the Antrim Coast Road, very famous and very beautiful Antrim Coast Road, so you can always see what the traffic is from a long way out. And they could easily spot from a while out, there was a lot of commotion going on in the wee town, and there's a lot of cars, there's a lot of ambulances, something's going on. So they bring the boat into port, and the priest's waiting on them, which is never a good sign. The priest says, "Were you all right, lads, last night?" Captain goes, "Aye, the three of us were grand." "Well, is there much luckier in that other boat?" Captain goes, "I hear what happened." Priest says, "Well, the story goes that they must have got caught in some form of whirlpool along the coast. Boat went down. People tried to rescue them, but we're bringing bodies up all along the beach today." Captain looks horrified. First officer's horrified. My grandfather's obviously terrified because, you know, first day in the job, that kind of thing. So they're walking through Glenarm, and along the water on the port, all the bodies they've rescued are lined up. And the local police go, "Right, it's a local community. You probably know somebody here. I'm going to need you to go down the line and see if you recognize anybody lying there." You know, go, "Fair enough." So they go through, they go down the line of anybody who fell victim to the whirlpool the night before, didn't recognize any of them. And then my grandfather got to the final body lying there. He looks it in the face. And he taps the first officer and he goes, "That's your boy that told me to turn directions last night. That was him. He's lying right there. He was the one that told us to move." My grandfather never went fishing on a boat ever again. He only ever fished the locks. He never went out to sea and he never got on another boat. That's a wee story I got from Colin Irwin, who tells me that the origins of it might actually be from the north of Scotland or North England. But it's one that stuck with me, and I quite like it.
Halloween has crept upon us once again. On the 31st of October, we mark this ancient Gaelic festival of Samhain, when the veil between this world of the living and the realm of the dead drops. A time for ghostly voices to whisper their tales in castles, crypts and classrooms alike. Let me take you, dear friends, on a journey through the twists and turns of storytelling, in a time-honoured ritual that echoes the traditions of my own Gaelic forefathers. We will look at how we can help our ghoulish students to tell tales in the strange tongue they are apprenticed to. What better way to mark the beginning of this dark half of the year than to engage in this most ancient of arts? Whether around a hearth or hillside, at school or at play, timeless oral traditions will not only survive, but they will thrive on the tongues of our students. Indulge with me, kind listener, while I tell you my tale. I am of the Kelly clan, the red-haired Valkyries, and I will be your guide, a girl that hails from the ancient home of Halloween. I was myself born sometime in the last century. My youth was spent by the fireside, sitting at the feet of my grandfather, listening to tales told of ghostly deeds done. I spent those years absorbing haunting accounts of the slipping of that flimsy veil that barely divides our worlds. Please, generous listener, sit back as I share the tale of the Quayside Silkie. Back in the early 19th century. A heartbroken widow named Martha Wilson hanged herself in her lodgings. As a suicide, she was denied a proper burial, and her body was later found at a crossroads with a stake driven through her heart. Her ghost was said to haunt the dark alleys by the quayside near where she lived at the Broad Chair. Shh, listen. Aye, it was dead of winter, middle of January perhaps, and a cold east wind was funnelling up the river. Now I knew the quayside, I knew all its wines and chairs, but that night, near 10 it might be, the place was quiet. I'm soulful, none mourns me. And I passed unnoticed in quiet anguish. None sought to reason why, only the law's indifference. I took me own life, you see. I was denied sacred burial, a crude stake thrust through my tortured heart. I still feel the pain. So it has become my fate to walk these barren streets where I lived the short space of my unhappy life, and I was finally driven to end it. In that opaque, dark, one night, a man followed me. A keelman, I judged. There were many. In the cold air he walked. As I walked till I turned into Trinity Chair. Taken aback, he followed suit and stood there all uncertain and raised my pale hands as though to beckon him forward and lifted the veil that he might see who had become of me. But he would see nothing. Of course, no features, merely emptiness. In that instant, he was gripped by terror, fled like the hounds of hell were at his heels. But I must continue walking. In the darkness, I can see no light. I'm the quayside silky.
Fiorella lived with her mother in a tiny house next to the woods. It was Carnival, time to celebrate and time to make fritters. But Fiorella's mom went to her and said, "Fiorella, we've got a problem. We don't have a pan that is big enough for us to make fritters." "Oh, Fiorella, I think there's only one solution. Can you help me?" "Yes," said Fiorella. "Oh, well, Fiorella, can you go to Barbazzuccon and ask him to lend us his big pan?" "What?" said Fiorella. "Barbazzuccon! Oh no, Mom! Barbazzuccon! Oh, he's an orc! He's got big red eyes and sharp white teeth and spit coming out of his mouth! Oh no, Mom! And Barbazzuccon, when he gets angry, he eats children in only one bite!" "Oh no, Mom, please, no!" "Fiorella, I'm afraid that's the only solution. We can't celebrate Carnival without fritters and we can't make fritters without a big pan. Okay, Mum, I'll go. And so Fiorella started walking in the woods. And she walked, and she walked, and she walked, and she thought, well, she just needed to be kind with Barbazzuccon. She just needed to be polite and not make him angry. Yes, that was all she needed. And in the distance, she saw Barbazzuccon's house. And she came to the door and she could hear her heart beating in her chest. And Fiorella raised her hand, ready to knock on the door, took a deep breath, and she knocked on the door, and came a sound from inside the house, and loud steps coming to the door, and the door opened, and there was Barbazzuccon. Who are you? And what do you want? Why are you here? Don't make me angry, or I'll eat you in only one bite. Ha ha ha.
Barbazzuccon, said Fiorella. Barbazzuccon, I'm Fiorella. And, you know, it's carnival, and it's time to make fritters, but my mom doesn't have a pan big enough to make fritters. So can you lend us your big pan, please?
My big pan? Said Barbazzuccon. Yes, I can lend you my big pan, but on one condition. I want you to bring me a basket full of fritters.
Ah, said Fiorella, a basket full of fritters. Well, of course I can do that, Barbazzuccon. And so Fiorella took the pan and she ran back home and she gave the pan to her mother, and her mother cooked the fritters in the big pan, and Fiorella ate some fritters that evening, and they were delicious. The following morning, Fiorella took the big pan and the basket full of fritters, and she started walking in the woods. And she was walking in the woods, and she could smell the fritters in the basket, and she thought, well, one fritter, only one fritter. Barbazzuccon won't notice. And she took a fritter from the basket and she ate it, and it was delicious. And she walked and she walked and she walked. She could smell the fritters in the basket. Well, just a second one. Barbazzuccon won't notice. She took a fritter and she ate it. It was delicious, and she walked, she walked, she walked. She took a fritter, she ate it. She took another fritter, she ate it. She took another fritter, she ate it. And she had almost reached Barbazzuccon's house when she looked at the basket, and she saw that the basket was empty. Oh no! Fiorella, what did I do? What did I do? Barbazzuccon is going to eat me in only one bite! Oh no! I'm so afraid! She looked around, trying to find a solution. She looked around, but she saw a donkey. And next to the donkey on the ground, donkey's poo. Fiorella thought, well, okay. She took the poo, she put the poo in the basket, and she covered the poo with a napkin. And then she went to Barbazzuccon's house, her heart beating hard in her chest. She took her hand up, She knocked on the door. She put the things on the ground and she started running away. And she could hear Barbazuko's door opening. But she ran away. She ran, 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 she ran. And she came to her house. Mom! Mom, help me! Mom, help me, please! She screamed, oh, what did I do, Mom? What did I do? Barbazuko is going to eat me in only one bite. Oh, Mom! And she told her story to her mom. And her mom said, don't worry, I'll find a solution. Oh, Mom, Mom, you don't understand, you don't understand. Don't worry, I'll find a solution. All afternoon, Fiorella's mom sewed. She sewed a doll. Then she took a plate from the kitchen and she smashed it. And she took the pieces and she put them inside the doll. She took some pins and she put some pins inside the doll. Then she put the doll in Fiorella's bed and she covered it with her blanket. Fiorella and her mom went to bed, Fiorella hiding under the covers of her mother. And in the night, Barbazuko came with his loud steps outside. Ah, Fiorella! I'm here for you! And the door opened. Neek! And Barbazuko came to the house. He looked at Fiorella's bed and ram! He ate the doll in only one bite and he started screaming and he ran off to the house. And Fiorella came out of the blanket. She looked at her mom and said, Mom, you saved me. Thank you. Well, said Fiorella's mom, I saved you and I hope you learned your lesson. I also hope that Barbazuko learned his lesson. And for all those of you listening, remember that stories do not exist to tell us that monsters exist, because we already know that. But stories exist to tell us that monsters can be defeated.
Ha 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 ha!